Good morning, and welcome to the Tuesday edition of The Morning Show with your hosts, Phil Huff and Julie Calamine. Good morning, Julie.
Good morning, Phil. How are you this beautiful Tuesday spring morning?
I'm good, but I had to stop and look around the glove compartment and find these dark-lensed things to avoid the glare and the sunglasses. There was actual sun this morning.
It was nice to see a bit of sun.
Yes.
Have you been getting out in that sun and enjoying weather?
Yeah, good weekend. Earth Day yesterday officially, but a lot of places celebrated Saturday and went out and did a little cleanup job and helped set up an information table at Farmant Park and then went and took a bike ride. And so it was a fun day. And you?
That's right. And I saw you Saturday at the Earth Day cleanup. That was a great morning. Yeah.
I found a rusted horseshoe, down in Sand Creek that's probably been there at least 5 decades from the amount of rust on it.
I saw that. That was a very rusty horseshoe.
Yeah, and then Sunday we did a little yard debris cleanup, start the burn pile going, getting things kind of ready to plant some stuff. The soil's still a little cold.
It is. I'm holding off on gardening because there's a bit of fishing I had to take care of.
Oh, well, you won't tell us where you went, but can you tell us how you did?
Did well. It was beautiful. And you know, when you're out fishing and it's a beautiful day, it doesn't really matter how you do.
That's true.
It's just nice to be out. Well, we've got an interesting and busy morning show today,
Phil.
We do.
But let's finish off some weather for the coming week so folks know what they can and can't do, or at least when they're going to get wet and when they're not, when they're doing it. Today we have a 20% chance of rain, believe it or not. This sunny weather may slide away. Slight chance of showers later on. It'll be a high of 63. Tonight a low of 40. Tomorrow it says sunny, unequivocal. I'm going to hold them to it. Again, a high of 63 and a low of 37. Then Thursday only partly sunny. Thursday night, Friday night, Saturday, all increasing chance of rain up to about 40%.
Oh, the rain is coming back, but it's nice to see those temperatures in the 60s.
Yeah,
it feels like spring.
April showers bring Mayflowers, and Mayflowers brings birds.
They do, and that leads us into an introduction of our first guest this morning, because we're going to be talking about birds and what's happening in the spring with birds. Birds are coming home. I'd like to introduce our guest this morning, Brian Baxter, an educator and wildlife researcher from Libby, Montana. Hi, Brian.
Morning, you guys. Good to see you again.
It is. It's nice to have you back. And
it's always fun to have Brian. It means there's lots of fun bird things to talk about.
It's true.
Absolutely.
It means that spring is here and we're going to be enjoying our wildlife, both birds and animals, but today we're focusing on birds. So, Brian, tell us, what have you been doing? And start by telling us just a little bit about yourself for those who haven't heard you on our morning show before.
Basically, obtained a degree in wildlife management and forestry, came out west in the mid-70s. And have about 4 decades working in wildlife research, forestry, and the last 17 to 20 in outdoor educational programs.
Yeah, and so what are you up to these days, Brian? Tell us a little what's on your plate.
Actually, I'm getting ready for a pretty serious kickoff here of the month of May. I've been scouting some areas to do our classes. We have a lot of classes coming up in May, every weekend in May pretty much. And so I like to go in and scout a little bit, especially in nasty weather, see where the birds and the waterfowl might be hanging out, sheltered from the elements a little bit, the little tricky, sneaky little coves and stuff like that. In case you have lousy weather when you don't have a beautiful day like today with the yellow orb making its appearance.
So springtime seems like a time of transition. We can all observe some of the birds that come and go. Tell us what's going on. What if we haven't been outside enough or observant enough, what are the changes that are taking place?
Well, we always have the resident birds, and some of them will stick around throughout the year. They're just kind of laying a little bit more low in the winter. So the resident birds will come out and make themselves more visible. But we also have the waves of the migrants coming in, which, you know, in some cases, especially waterfowl, can mean, you know, hundreds of mergansers or grebes.
And Brian, you said the birds make themselves a little more visible because they're more active, but I've noticed something else. Their colors are more visible starting this time of the year. They're brighter. I have goldfinches at my feeder, and they've gone gold. They must molt or something because the males are bright, bright yellow.
Definitely. They're getting into the molting. Depending on the species, you know, some owls start doing their mating thing late January, great horn, mid-February. But now most of them are coming into that molting stage. They want to use that colorful, the males are using that colorful plumage to assist in their displays that they're trying to obtain a mate, as well as mark their territories. And with the woodpeckers and that, they have the territorial drumming, and they have their calls that they use too.
So give us a few examples of some of the ones we might look for here that are coming out that have been quiet in the winter.
Well, as far as the birds of prey, we've got some northern harriers making themselves a little more available. Great blue herons are kind of on the rise because you have your resident great blues, but you have migrating as well. And the mating procedures, you know, that brings them out to the max. The red-naped sapsucker, of course, they're visible too with that red head. And there's been some different confusion over the years about yellow-bellied, red-naped, and they lumped them into one species, and then some other scientists divided them into three. So the Sibley's western birds is a good one that's updated.
Yeah, we see most every spring, or at least for the last 4, 5, 6 years, a family of red-naped sapsuckers come to the yard. And I don't think they're necessarily making their nest each year. They're using the same cavity, and I don't know where they go in the winter. I think it's local, but we notice them because the young are chirping, and mom and dad are flying out and in and out a lot, so they're really obvious.
Yeah.
So they hang around in the winter and probably tree up somewhere?
Some do, if they can make a living, you know.
So here's a not-so-hypothetical question. This was a heavy winter for snow in February, winds. Our red-naped sapsucker condo came down, dead-rotted birch, and it finally gave up the grave.
Right.
So are they likely to move to a nearby tree or move on to a different neighborhood?
Generally speaking, if they've been successful at rearing young and feeding and mating, they usually want to stay in the same general area. So the chances are probably a good 75-80% that they will be around somewhere. You'll hear them, you know, and you'll see that horizontal drilling kind of deal. It's when we were out tracking this winter too, sometimes we do late winter, early spring tracking / birding, and we see some of those trees with the bear claw marks, and then it's got the red-naped sapsucker drilling holes, like they're the punctuation, and the bears are kind of like the hieroglyphics on there. They're beautiful art trees.
And maybe rotten trees if they're being pecked.
They're tricky too. They actually get in there and drill, and sometimes they'll move on to, say, a dozen trees over a period of a half a day, and then they'll come back to the original ones they drilled because the insects are attracted to the sap also. So they get a little surf and turf action, you know. They'll get the insects and the sap.
Yeah, they're very, very active birds. If you're just tuning in, this is KRFY, the Tuesday morning show on 88.5. And this morning, Julie and I are interviewing Brian Baxter about birds, spring birds, the time of transition.
That's right. And we're starting off with some talk about woodpeckers. And I use a suet feeder, and I certainly see some woodpeckers as a result of that. But let's talk about what woodpeckers we might see this time of year, in addition to the sapsuckers or woodpeckers. So what else?
Yeah, well, we have your basics, which are the downy, the hairy, and the pileated. And somebody asked me the other day about the downy and hairy because they can be tricky at a distance. So I remember the D as in dwarf would be downy. The H as in hairy for huge would be hairy woodpeckers. And then, of course, the pileated, a little bit hard not to see the woody woodpeckers out there. And here, you know, a deeper resonance. But a couple of the cool ones also is the Lewis's, Meriwether Lewis named the one Lewis woodpecker, that has kind of a pink color to it. And these are a little bit generally more uncommon. The American three-toed woodpecker and the blackback. And especially the three-toed and the blackback, they will excavate the outside of bark. They're not really a driller as much as the pileated are. They're more of a scaler. They scale off the bark in large patches. So, for example, I went into a fire damage stand over on the West Pipe, and I saw big patches, 2 feet long by a foot and a half wide of where they were. So I knew that there was a chance to find your blackback or your American three-toed.
They like those fire-scarred landscapes. They're not obligate to them, but they're more frequently found there, aren't they?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they love that because it's new ground. It assists them a little bit in peeling the bark off because it's fried bark, so it comes off a little bit easier. And the three-toed is the only, like, the blackback and the three-toed have the three actual three-toed mode rather than the K kind of a deal like most owls and tree-clinging birds, woodpeckers, sapsuckers, etc.
Yeah, because I've not seen those woodpeckers. I'll have to keep an eye out.
Oh, yeah, and the one really cool one I should throw in, too, and this is, I'm keeping my eye out for this one now. I've seen one in the last 40 years, but the white-headed, and they hang out in mature conifers with openings, and they're black, but a white head, and the male has a red nape, and they also bark scalers.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Well, I was going to say, it's springtime, also a great time for the waterfowl. You touched briefly on the heron earlier, but I think of spring, and I think of grebes.
Oh, yeah.
Especially out along Denton Slough.
Oh, yeah. And the grebes are cool, too, because they have that, I call it the roadrunner syndrome, like the cartoon, where the male and female will get together and they're doing a mutual kind of a courtship display. And they'll basically roadrun or run right along the surface of the water together, pretty much rushing right along. So that's kind of a neat behavior. And also, the golden eyes, oh yeah, the golden eyes have that head tilt. They tilt, the males tilt their head back and then they kick up the water, so the water is flying out there too. So you're looking from a distance going, what is he up to, you know, and then you kind of tune in a little bit better on him.
Is that a courtship display?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And also great blue herons, sometimes, and us humans don't see it all the time. They're pretty secretive sometimes. But the great blue heron males will actually stand on top of the female and do a major wing spread, a big display type of a thing. So they're kind of claiming their mating rights and also letting the other males know that, you know, hey, don't mess with us kind of a thing.
Wow, interesting.
Is it early or late for the tundra swans and the cranes to come
through?
There's
some of them been seen coming out through there. Yeah.
I was hearing sandhills flying over the other day. They're pretty distinctive, their call.
Yeah, and the sandhills, I know in the Flathead and over here too, they'll come out a little bit earlier than a lot of the other birds. I mean, you know, late February, they're starting to come in. And the other interesting behavior about the ducks is the ruddy duck, and they're a really pretty duck, kind of a bluish bill. But they'll do this deal called a bubbling courtship, where they'll like blow down through their nose at their feathers and use their spoonish bill kind of like as a paddle to ruffle up the feathers, and it'll make a lot of gurgling noise too. So that's part of their deal, and that's also a territorial kind of a thing.
That sounds interesting. Are we likely to see ruddy ducks here?
Yeah, occasionally. I've seen them out there. They're pretty obvious looking, you know. It's like I said, it's got like a long bluish bill and an interesting color arrangement. So,
yeah.
You know, of course, I'm always trying to teach myself, like everybody else that's serious about birds, and it's a lot less difficult to concentrate on the males. You know, the hens are a lot more tricky because of the camouflage for the nesting behavior and that.
Yeah, tend to be a little less distinctive.
Oh, yeah, and that's smart. Mother Nature's pretty smart at that tactic.
So where are some good places for people who are just starting out to take their field guides and go?
We have a couple classes coming up. One May 4th over here at Sandpoint College, out of Sandpoint College. And we'll be hitting some of the local areas. And it's weather dependent to a degree, but we might hit portions of the Pack River. We might cruise some areas of MacArthur Lake, down on the Kootenai, maybe hit a little of the Kootenai Wildlife Refuge. And of course, the Kootenai River and the chain of lakes over into the Lincoln County
area. We want to hear more about the events. And for most people living in the area for some time, and they know where these places are, they can Google them. But the MacArthur Lake, did you say the Denton Slough area, Kootenai River Wildlife Refuge? What are some other good places? It's always nice just to go down
Pack
to City
River,
Beach too. Pack River Delta.
Clark Fork Delta.
Yeah, the edges of water.
But it does bring us to the point of, for folks who really know very little about birding, a class can be helpful, and you do have one coming. I see it's on May 4th. Why don't you tell us about that, Brian?
Yeah, that should be a good one. We've got some great spots over this way. This is sponsored by Northern Idaho College, and I wanted to let folks know that they do cut this registration off on May 1st, so April 30th would be about the latest you can register. And there's a phone number, 208-769-3333, or you can Google it on nic.edu/WTC. And we'll usually meet up there, talk for 20 minutes, go over a little outline, and then hit the field right away. You know, we don't want to burn too much time in the classroom when it's so beautiful out. We have several areas. The way I do it, it's kind of a rock and roll birding, you know. We don't waste too much time. You know, we don't take an hour lunch sitting at a picnic table. We just keep rocking and rolling. It's a good way to teach, because you get different areas and different environments to help people learn how to see birds. And the main thing is be quiet. You know, mm-hmm. Be quiet, blend in, wear soft camo clothes, use the edges of a timber, use natural blinds. You can build one if you have private property near a water body. Build your own little blind, stay in there, be cool, be quiet, and pay attention to the wind.
And this is appropriate for people from all different ranges of experience?
Oh, absolutely. You know, like I wrote in a little piece over in Libby for the Montanian, it's a learning experience, you know. It's, you know, wondering about those birds is the beginning of the wisdom. So you get curious and you say, hey, that's kind of a neat action. So then study and come on out and just take your time. And, yeah, we definitely have all levels.
And so you've got that class, and it looks like another one that you're teaching soon.
Yeah, for the Friends of Scotchman Peaks. That's coming up May 18th, and that's in the beautiful Bull River Valley.
Oh, that is beautiful.
Yeah,
beautiful.
The Bull River Valley rocks. And we'll be hitting some Avista areas and some road tour stops. That's kind of a very light day. Might do one or two really short hikes. But there's a lot of good viewing spots over there. There's cliffs to look for peregrine falcons. There's portions of Bull Lake. There's the Bull River. And we might even take a little woodpecker walk into a fire damage stand to maybe look for these more exotic Lewis and American three-toed and the black-headed woodpeckers.
You were mentioning before the show began, too, there's an event coming up north to our friends in B.C.
Oh, yeah, the Creston people are putting on the Creston Bird Fest, which is a three-day deal, May 8th, 9th, 10th, and 11th, I believe, in there. And they're so hospitable up there. They have world experts coming in. They have a lot of kids' activities this year. They have some wine tasting going on, and they have birding by kayak, by foot, by van, and by bicycle. So
it sounds very civilized. And, you know, many people here, I think of, oh, that's Canada. It's way up north, but it's Creston. It's just a little over an hour away.
Oh, yeah. It's yeah. From here, it's about that, right? About an hour and 15 minutes or so. And they're very welcoming. They're very welcoming. The food that they have is excellent, and it's a little different culinary menu than the American type of deal, and so that's always kind of interesting, too.
A person can get out of the country and learn more about birding.
Yeah.
International experience.
International birder, yeah.
That does sound fun. That would be a birding immersion, wouldn't it? 4 days.
Birding immersion, yeah.
What do you hope for every spring to find that you haven't found yet that you know someday you're going to see?
Well, I actually was thinking about that. And some of the unusual and beautiful migrants that I try to keep an eye out for. And if you get one of these on the class, the people are just thrilled. Of course, you don't want to build up expectations. So you don't really, I don't usually mention them. But if they come through, they're a super bonus. So northern hawk owls, they'll hang out on the edge of old growth and mature forests. Very cool looking predator. Double-crested cormorants who compete with great blue herons for their rookeries. Snow geese, of course, sandhill cranes. Trumpeter, tundra, and whistling swans. I had one whistling swan in the last 7 years.
Mm.
American white pelican, two of those in the last 17 years. Harlequin ducks, of course, fast water, mountain stream kind of a deal. Common nighthawks are coming out, and northern harriers, which have a great pattern, a very unique pattern of hunting and diving. And peregrine falcons, we'll be looking for them too, because you never know. Well, I've got two sightings of those in the last 12 years.
Yeah, they're pretty awesome birds.
You'd be lucky to see any of those. It would be great.
Oh, yeah.
And the songbirds are moving north, but I know that's you emphasize birds of prey and the shorebirds, but you know your songbirds as well.
To some degree, but actually, you know, that's when I'm always constantly trying to research and edumacate myself, as we kid around and say. The songbirds are, you know, there's a myriad of them that are all similar, but the modern apps do help. Now, when folks come out, we don't depend on electronics. We depend on the connection with the earth and use our natural skills. However, high technology is really good for cross-checking and when they have the calls on there, or the drumming behaviors of some of the woodpeckers and sapsuckers, because they're all a little bit different, descending and ascending notes, number of hammers per minute, and things like that. Yeah, so when you get highly techy, go high tech.
The phone apps are really nice because you can, you know, get instant feedback, but there's something about the joy of making an observation, checking it to a field guide, flipping through, trying to almost key it out like you would a plant, you know, versus taking an image and having an image file locator or a song file locator tell you what it is or isn't.
I have to agree. There is a place for both if you're really stumped, but it does change the experience when you've got your phone out and you're glancing.
I think you remember it better when you put a little thought process into figuring it out.
And I think for a lot of people, if they're holding a smaller field guide like the Sibley's or the Audubon North American Birds, they've got their binoculars around their neck, and so they can look and then kind of look down at the book on their hand, or they're leaned against a tree or a stump, so they can move back and forth and do a comparative analysis really quick. And that's what you got to do, because in 24 seconds, you might have action, then you may not have any action for the next 20 minutes.
That's so true.
So what do folks in the classes, what should they bring with them, and what should they expect to have provided?
Lunch water, good soft camouflage clothing, or at least natural colors, a bird guide of some kind, good pair of binoculars and or spotting scopes. And what we provide is an inkling from experience on how to spot, how to move with stealth, how to remain quiet, how to listen, and the listening enables you to hear the drumming, the calls, the wing beats, and those details that'll zone you in on it. And it's a lot of fun, too. I mean, we're serious about it, but we have a lot of fun. A lot of times afterwards, we'll go for pizza and a beverage or something like that, too. So people make friends, and they get to talk to other folks and say, hey, you know, you hear them after the class. They're like, well, let's get together and do this again, you know, next Sunday or something. So I like to see that. I like to see people socialize.
It's a great activity that you can do on your own or with a small group of people and enjoy that camaraderie that comes with it.
Absolutely.
It's true. Well, Brian Baxter, we've enjoyed having you with us this morning.
I always enjoy being with you guys. Yeah. I appreciate you inviting me over, and maybe we'll get together and go out and do a little birding together.
Boy, I would enjoy it. You're such an expert.
Well, I keep trying. Every day's a learning experience.
We'll have to figure out the next transition phase sometime this fall. Maybe have you back in and we'll talk about the birds as they're doing the southbound migration.
Oh, yeah. Do the little wetland wandering type of a deal in the fall. Absolutely. That'd be fun.
Very good. Well, Brian Baxter of Silver Cloud Associates, thank you for joining us on the KRFY Morning Show.
Yeah. Thanks for having me, guys. I appreciate it.
We're going to take a short music break, then we're going to come back with a couple guests and talk about an upcoming event called Idaho Gives that most listeners have probably heard about. We're going to go into a little more detail and talk about that when we're back. For right now, we're going to listen to a little Counting Crows in honor of Brian being here and their version of Joni Mitchell's hit Big Yellow Taxi, which has sort of Earth Day-ish themes. We're left over with that Earth Day feeling from yesterday.
Excellent.
They paved paradise and put up a parking lot with a pink hotel, a boutique, and a swinging hot spot. Don't it always seem to go that you don't know what you got till it's gone? They paved paradise and put up a parking lot. They took all the trees and put them in a tree museum. And they charge the people a dollar and a half to see them. No, 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 don't it always seem to go that you don't know what you got?
Big Yellow Taxi. They pave paradise to put up a parking lot. That's a horrible vision.
It is. But what a nice version, Counting Crows.
Yeah, the Counting Crows, a little bit of spring into your step for post-Earth Day, Tuesday of a bright, bright, sunny day.
It is. And if you're just joining us, you are here for the Tuesday Morning Show with KRFY, community-supported radio for the Idaho Panhandle. I'm Julie, and I'm here with Phil.
And we're welcome back. First half of the show, we had Brian Baxter on talking about spring birding. And the other thing that's really predictable about heading into the first week of May is Idaho Gives is right around the corner. With us in the studio this morning to talk about Idaho Gives are Mandy Evans, Executive Director of the Panhandle Animal Shelter, and Dennison Webb, Executive Director of Selkirk Outdoor Leadership and Education. Welcome to the show once again.
Thank you.
Morning, Phil.
So let's start with a little, just a brief bit about your backgrounds and why you're interested in Idaho Gives, and then we can talk about Idaho Gives.
We're pointing at each other. You guys can't see it. Dennison and I have been working on Idaho Gives for a while now, four or five years. So I'm the executive director for an organization. And so when Idaho Gives happens, it's kind of a fun opportunity for us to leave our four walls and see everybody and all the different organizations that are in town come together and help support each other.
That summed it up nicely.
So tell us about Idaho Gives. What is it?
Idaho Gives is a 24-hour day of giving. However, you can jump online right now and actually pre-schedule a donation. So various states have giving days. So the Idaho Nonprofit Center has done a fabulous job of really coordinating and gathering support for this day of giving in Idaho. And I think last year wasn't it like $2.5 million that were raised in 24 hours.
Yeah, it's an amazing
so
amount.
There's various events usually regionally throughout the state, and the center has webinars and things like that to kind of help nonprofits really maximize their day. Here in Sandpoint, we're having two events. One, we're going to kick it off in the morning at Evans Brothers from 8 to 10. And then later in the afternoon, we're going to venture over to the Idaho Poor Authority and celebrate and have a donation station there as well. So If folks don't have access to internet and things like that, they can stop in there. And we'll have iPads and things like that. And they'll be able to learn more about the organizations that are participating in Bonner County as well.
So there's the online giving, kind of the mainstay. And then there's the two events that help people who might not be online. Tell us about the history. How long has it been going on and how did it come about?
Ooh. I don't know if I can answer that one, Phil. I will say, if you go to idahogives.org, there is a facts page on that page, which gives a comprehensive kind of background in terms of Idaho Gives and, you know, what is it, you know, what's involved and things like that. But something really to point out to folks that if you're, you know, kind of waiting to give, you know, to a nonprofit that is participating in Idaho Gives, this is the day to really do it. And here's why, is that your donation can be leveraged towards what are called golden tickets and different other monetary awards throughout the day. So there's awards for leaderboards who, you know, depending on the size of your organization, there's peer-to-peer fundraising, there's offline. Oh, actually, they're not doing offline this year, but...
Yeah. So an opportunity for both some matching and some bonus.
Yeah.
So your dollars. So the Idaho Nonprofit Center has put a lot of time and energy into acquiring corporate sponsors. And so those corporate sponsors are matching the donations of the individuals throughout the state. And that's where the online giving happens. So it's really important that people make those donations through the portal that's provided by each organization that has an Idaho Gives page. That's where those donations come from or go through. And then based on those is when our names would be put into the drawing. And I know you've won a few of those.
Two.
Dennison,
yep. I want everybody to know I haven't won any.
Oh,
my competitive spirit is coming out.
Luck of the draw. Yes.
But Mandy, what I'm hearing you saying is that it's important to go through Idaho Gives rather than directly to the nonprofit, because that allows you the opportunity for the corporate matching and the bonuses.
Yeah, and yeah. I think that any nonprofit would agree that though there is that wonderful chance of getting the additional funds, no one would deny a direct donation to their organization.
Of course not. Of course
so
not.
You've mentioned a couple times participating organizations. Many nonprofits are on it, not all, but many. And do you have a list of the local ones who are participating on Idaho Gives?
Mandy's trying to look it up
right now.
Well,
you know what? I know that Soul and the Panhandle Animal Shelter are participating. You guys participating? Is KRFY participating?
We are not this year, but it's been under consideration. So I think that KRFY will be an Idaho Gives participant by next year.
Well, and the other thing to consider is that, you know, for especially, I think it's important to recognize that there are smaller nonprofits that don't have the amount of support and all that to sign up and do all the efforts. So even if they're not participating in the program, it's always nice to recognize them.
Sure. And I think Friends of Scotchman Peak Wilderness is another participant. So that's
correct.
One thing we
know. Yeah. There is several others. If you go to, we do have Idaho Gives Bonner County Facebook page. If you Google that, you can actually pull up the Idaho Gives at IPA event and see the list of participating organizations. And also, for organizations that aren't necessarily coming to those events, you can go to idahogives.org and actually enter in what county you want to search for and pull up all the participating organizations in that county.
Oh, good. And there's a Facebook page, too.
Correct, yes.
So there's the event Facebook page locally, and then statewide there's the Idaho Gives page.
Correct, yep.
And it's a great day to support more than one nonprofit, support your favorite
one.
Yeah,
absolutely,
But this is a good time for individuals who make a donation for the potential for their dollars to be leveraged even farther.
Correct, yep. And there's different ways to give this year, too. You can do the normal, enter your debit card into the deal, but they're also doing an ACH transfer that you can do. It's a $100 minimum, though, and there's a flat fee for that transfer. So, that's pretty nice for folks that don't feel comfortable or want to give a little more and don't want to be taxed on that amount.
So that would be a direct bank transfer from your account.
Correct, yep.
And some of the nonprofits that are participating would be Lake Ponderay Waterkeepers, the Friends of Scotchman Peaks Wilderness, Idaho Conservation League, Kiniksu Land Trust, the American Heritage Wildlife Foundation, Panada Theater, Friends of the Lake Ponderay Trail Memorial Center, the Memorial Community Center. Isn't that in Hope?
That is in Hope, mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah.
Transitions in Progress, Peace River Ministry, Advocates for Women, and the Rock Creek Alliance.
Yeah, so it's quite a pretty good quite a group full of slate. People. And even if a group's not participating, it's not a bad day to remember your local favorite nonprofit, and you can make a direct donation to them if they're not part
of
it.
You know, I do think that sometimes people look at, nonprofits with some level of criticism where it's like, well, they're not participating. Why wouldn't they participate? This is such a great opportunity. Why wouldn't they? Or why aren't they at that event? And it's normally not because we don't want to be. It's a resource issue. So supporting those smaller nonprofits that aren't able to participate due to resource issues, only donating to them is only going to help them increase their effectiveness.
Mm-hmm. Good point. And by resources, you mean both availability of folks to work with Idaho Gives, and there's probably a small fee involved, too.
Yes, there is a fee to participate.
Okay. Yeah, it takes a long time to set up. The planning for this has been in the progress for some time.
Yeah, it is. You really do, if you're going to be effective on it, you have to dedicate a pretty good amount of energy towards it.
Sure. And each of those groups has some presence on the Idaho Gives website, so you can go there and look through. And if you're new to the area and you've heard a name or two here and you want to find out more, you can go to Idaho Gives, find the name of the group you're intrigued by, and there'll be a link back to their website so you can find out more information about them.
Yeah, and even going to those events, like Idaho Poor Authority is really fun because you have all these groups and all these people that care about them, and they all kind of collide that night. And to be able to go around and talk to everybody and learn more about their organizations, I think is pretty cool.
Mm-hmm.
And would the same be true at Evans Brothers? They'll be represented in the morning and the evening?
Yeah, but somehow it's just more fun when you're drinking beer over coffee.
Well.
Yeah, I would say the morning scene is more, I want to use the word docile or quiet.
Yeah.
You know,
a little subdued.
It's not as rambunctious.
It depends on how many cups you've had.
That's true.
Late morning can be pretty darn exciting.
That's right. Yeah. It's a known fact that people give more when they're drinking alcohol.
Yes. So, yeah, we weren't going to be that blunt, but yes, go to IPA and then your inhibitions wear away.
There we go.
Yes.
Well, are there any other things about Idaho Gives you'd like to share with us that we haven't covered yet?
I don't know. I don't think so.
I would just say, if you're on the fence, come on out and learn more, and if you want to learn more about some great organizations, definitely stop into the IPA and go to idahogives.org and then you can Google Bonner County Nonprofits and find us that way too. And every organization has a page.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, I have a question or two, Phil, just a last one. Have you found that folks have been pretty generous on that day?
Is it
a good day for giving?
Yeah.
Good.
The other thing people can think about is that if you do have an organization that you care deeply for and they're not participating, maybe that's a good opportunity to volunteer in that capacity to get them up and going for Idaho Gives.
Yeah. And we do live stream to other states, just so folks who are listening know, you don't have to live in Idaho to give on Idaho Gives today. The focus is on Idaho nonprofits. But because of the wonders of online, you can live anywhere and go through the donation portal.
Yeah, we had folks in Europe actually give last year, which is really cool. And again, just to stress to folks, you can pre-schedule your donation right now.
Mm-hmm.
So again, go to idahogives.org, jump on Bonner County and find the various nonprofits that are participating, and then go ahead and schedule your donation.
And there's actually an award this year that if you get a donation from all 50 states.
Oh, wow.
You're
Oh, you're in the hunt for something.
Yeah.
That's pretty tough.
That could be tough, I know.
Julie, how many relatives do you have?
Most are in Minnesota, Phil, so that's not going to help.
We got two states covered for terrifying.
That's right. But it will help somewhat. Why don't you repeat the details for us another time?
We're doing two events, 8 to 10 at Evans Brothers Coffee. And then we're having another event from 5 to 8 at the Idaho Poor Authority.
And that's when?
From 5 to 8 p.m.
Yes, what day?
Oh, sorry. Idaho Gives is on May 2nd. And it's a 24-hour day of giving. and idahogives.org is the website.
So that's next Thursday, everybody.
Idahogives.org.
Right. That's right.
Anytime between now and next Thursday. But next Thursday is the big push, the big day. You'll probably be hearing and seeing people's posts on Facebook and through emails and other sundry online things.
That's right. So folks can bring their checkbooks on the day, and before that, they should get going right now so that they can donate. Or can they bring a checkbook? Do they have to
They
do
can
online?
Bring a checkbook. Unfortunately, offline donations, and that's what is considered, would not count towards those awards. However, all nonprofits love donations, of course, because they need to do the critical work that they are. And so if check is preferred, feel free.
Sure.
They absolutely count towards the mission. Critical work
but
done.
But if I'm hearing you right, if possible, bring your credit card. And
correct.
That will allow you to qualify for the online
or
awards.
ACH. We can do that too.
Yeah. Right. I mean, they have prizes like first donation. So getting your, you know, the donors to wake up at
in the middle of the night.
Yeah. Or early. I mean, it's just really fun the way that they're doing it this year.
I think Southern Idaho has an hour on us that way, though.
I know.
So it's worth it to go online and really look at the fun ways that you can give and maybe benefit your own organization, the organization you'd like to support.
Absolutely.
All right. I'll have to check it out.
Well, thanks again for coming in. Once again, our guests for this portion of the morning show have been Dennison Webb and Mandy Evans. With Selkirk Outdoor Leadership and Education in the Panhandle Animal Shelter, talking about Idaho Gives Day. Earlier, we heard Brian Baxter. If you missed any part of today's show and would like to listen to a podcast, that'll be up on our website later on at krfy.org, which I should also mention is a convenient way to donate to the station. Go through our secure PayPal. We're going to segue into a little bit of community events, upcoming activities with Joel Gray and Liza Minnelli's song that seemed appropriate for the